No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/hailmary. That's hims.com/hailmary for your free online visit. hims.com/hailmary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Welcome to another live episode of the Wisco Fanatic Show, where we discuss the Packers, Bucks, Brewers, Badgers football, and basketball from an optimistic perspective. Wisco Fanatics is brought to you by Cardboard Legacy, Wisconsin's most complete sports card shop. Buy, sell, grade, and consign all at their location in Oshkosh.
Hello, welcome to another Wisco Fanatics Wednesday. As you can see, I am on my own today. Jake is dealing, unfortunately, with some weather-related difficulties. He is without power and therefore without internet. So I am rolling solo today, just like Jake was last week while I was dealing with some stuff at home. So I have some notes from Jake on his thoughts on the 3 Bucks games and the 5 Brewers games that have happened since last Wednesday. So I have my notes, and I still have some notes from Jake. I just won't get to hear Jake and I discuss some things together. That said, a couple announcements before we get going into the show here. Our Patreon is live. It's live. You can sign up for it right now. That $5 a month to subscribe to us is going to get you 2 watch parties a month, which we did one 2 weeks ago on the Bucks and Thunder game. You can see some highlights of that. We have some of the pregame highlights and the postgame highlights. And then before that, there were some of the highlights from the game itself and mine and Jake's live reactions to that. That's what Patreon is going to be for us. Just a little way for Jake and I to move one step closer to making the show our full-time career, which is what we hope to do. Other than that, April 16th, that is 2 weeks from yesterday. That is a Tuesday. That is going to be Brewers Padres. That is going to be our next watch party. Jake and I are going to be doing a live watch party during that Brewers and Padres game on April 16th. So you will be able to get one more look at what our watch parties, what our pregame and postgame shows are going to entail before signing up for it. So between now and the end of April, people who are part of our Patreon are going to get to vote on which games we cover for the month of May, which could potentially cover up to 2 Bucks playoff games, and obviously a whole slate full of Brewers games. Obviously, Jake and I have to make our schedules work, so we will have those posted on the Patreon for what games people can pick from that Jake and I are available to do the watch parties together for. So that said, I'm going to jump into Bucks. Bucks move to the top of the show now that they are the nearest to their postseason. So I'm going to start with the Bucks and the Pelicans. My biggest thing with the Bucks and the Pelicans last week was the second quarter. The second quarter was killer. The Bucks were 8 of 24 from the floor. They only scored 20 points, and the Pelicans were 12 of 26 from the floor, and they scored 35 points. The Bucks were all rebounded 16 to 10, and Dame was the only player to make more than one field goal in the quarter. On the whole, for the game, Chris didn't shoot well, but he still had 8 rebounds, 6 assists, so he stayed involved. Anytime guys are doing things outside of scoring to stay involved, to keep themselves involved in the game, I will call that out and appreciate it. So I do appreciate Chris for staying active and being able to still have 8 rebounds and 6 assists. Another big thing that came out of this game for me was the fact that the Bucks had only 11 bench points, something we'll see in some of these other games that does improve. And then between this game and the Lakers game, and I'm not saying that there's some conspiracy here, because it could also just be the Bucks not being as aggressive. But the Bucks shot 15 fewer free throws than the Pelicans did in this game. So between the Pelicans game and the Lakers game last Tuesday, the Bucks were minus 30 in those two games on free throw attempts. That definitely stood out to me with that. And then just looking at it, the Bucks had three bigs finish with five fouls each: Giannis, Brook Lopez, and Bobby Portis. And you know, it's tough because the Pelicans obviously have Zion, and they have Jonas Valanciunas, who has been a career Bucks killer, which is annoying, but it is what it is. And then this is the thing. My last thing on here is the Bucks. Only way they face the Pelicans in the playoffs is in the finals. So if it happens, we can cross that bridge of defending Zion when we get there. But overall, I do think the Bucks played decent defense, holding the Pelicans to 107 points. But then you look at a guy like CJ McCollum. Yes, he scored 25 points, but it took him 24 shots. And the Pelicans on their season average 115.6 points per game. Bucks held in the 107. Now, looking at Jake's notes, for the Pelicans, he has written the Pelicans were the more aggressive team in attacking the rim outside of Giannis, and were creating offense by being aggressive on the offensive glass. He said the Bucks shooting kept them close enough in the first half. He said, I know they were down double digits, but that doesn't mean shit anymore. And shooting almost brought us all the way back. Bucks need to up the defensive intensity and be consistent with it for four quarters. I can totally see that the consistency on the defensive end is absolutely going to dictate how far they go in the playoffs. Because we've seen plenty of instances of the Bucks playing really, really, really good defense, really high-level defense. And we've also seen instances, which some of these things happened last night during the Wizards game, of just really bad defense. So we know the capability is there, and I just agree with Jake that it's going to be a matter of consistency. So let's move on to the Bucks and the Hawks. This was Sunday. And this one is interesting. So Atlanta started out 3-for-4 from the three-point line. They jumped out to a 14-6 lead. Bucks then outscored them 27-14 in the rest of the quarter, including an 8-0 run after Doc Rivers called that timeout. Chris Middleton was doing really well in the mid-range. He had 12 points in the first quarter. Bobby Portis started off really nicely. Pat Connaughton had three really great passes in the beginning of this game. Just looking at Pat Connaughton moving the ball and just the team in general moving the ball well, it built a 13-point lead. They were up as much by as much as 18 points. They went on a 17-4 run, and they finished the half up 14. Third quarter, the Bucks were playing good D, holding the Hawks to one and duns. They got their lead up to 21 points, and then the Hawks started hitting some threes, scoring in the paint. They were able to cut the lead to 12, but that was as close as it got to. Up 15 going into the fourth quarter. The Bucks had a few empty possessions to start the fourth quarter, kept the door open with Giannis on the bench. The Hawks did eventually cut the lead to single digits in the fourth quarter until the Bucks hit back-to-back threes, and then the lead kind of just floated between 9 and 12 points. And then Malik Beasley, he did start this game. A little rough shooting, but he was making shots when it counted. And the Bucks scored 33 points in the fourth quarter, and no individual had more than 7 points in that fourth quarter against the Hawks. So just really good balance by the Bucks against the Hawks in the fourth quarter. Giannis had four and ones in the game. I had a collection of those posted on the page. That was really entertaining to see that. And then seeing the Bucks play without Dame, and I wanted to get Jake's opinion on this, and I'll have to talk to him after this and going into next week. But this should have occurred to me sooner. Personally, the key for the big three between Dame, Giannis, and Chris is going to be adjusting their play style to who they're on the floor with. Now, obviously, they're all going to start the game together, but looking at it, there are games where each of them individually has high assist numbers, and there's been lots of games where multiple have had high assist numbers. All three of them are capable of being score-first players, and they are all capable of being pass-first players. And like I said, this should have occurred to me sooner that these guys can all – they're all smart enough. They all have high enough basketball IQ to tailor their play style a little bit to A, whoever's got the hot hand, and B, whoever's got the best matchup. So like I said, I really think that should have occurred to me sooner, but still worth mentioning, in my opinion, before we're getting to the playoffs. This was also the Bucks' first win without Damian Lillard in the lineup. Now, Jake's notes for the Bucks and the Hawks. Jake has Giannis and Chris dominated. Patrick Beverley showed some real toughness battling the wrist injury and making clutch plays on both ends of the floor. I'm glad he brought that up because Patrick Beverley deserves all of the respect and more for what he's doing for playing through his wrist injury that's going to require surgery in the offseason. I'll get into Patrick Beverley from last night's game also, but just more of the same thing, honestly, and how it's going to affect tonight and going forward. Jake also has written, the Bucks were more aggressive attacking the rim, and evidence of that is the free throw numbers from the Pelicans game to the Hawks game. I'm going to pull up here and just see. I didn't have it written down how many free throws that the Bucks had against the Hawks. The Bucks had 35 free throws, so they were plus 17 against the Hawks. So that is much better. Brett said, Bev is a true dog, even ankle he wanted to keep playing. And that's exactly what I'm going to get to in a second here, Brett, when I finish Jake's notes from the Hawks game, which that was it. So I guess we can jump right into that Wizards game from last night. And then, yes, I get that losing to the Wizards is frustrating, and I get that. I'm going to just touch on Patrick Beverley because that was the point that we were on. Beverley wanted to come back in. He rolled his ankle in last night's game. He wanted to come back in. Like, he was taped up. He was stretching his ankle out. He was ready to get back in the game. He isn't playing tonight against the Grizzlies, but I think that's just because, as I'm going to use this to transition into everything else, because I do not give a shit that Damian Lillard was not playing last night because he had a groin injury. I don't care. Because at this point of the season, with 7 games left after last night, I care way more about him and everybody else being 100% for the playoffs. I really don't think that there's going to be a ton more chemistry to be figured out in 7 games. Like, sure, there could be some, and there could be some rust shaken off from guys who have been dealing with injuries, but there's not a ton more that you're going to learn in the last 7 games, the last 2 weeks of the season, looking at going from, say, January 29th when Doc Rivers took over to now. So if there's anything where it's like kind of questionable, sit out. Totally fine with guys sitting out a game. If it's, you know, like a questionable thing, just take the game off. And here's the thing, and people are going to be like, oh, we're going to let the Cavaliers catch us for the third seed, which I saw people doing, you know, being like, oh, looks like the Bucks are trying to play for the third seed. Just want to throw this out there that the Bucks won a championship as a third seed. So I really don't care what their seed is, if they're 2 or 3. I'm really, really not that worried about it. Brett said he agrees. I'd rather have them healthy for the playoffs than a win against the Wizards. We pretty much have that second seed. Go get them or get them rest and ready for the playoffs. Yeah, and that's exactly it. They have 7 games remaining, and they're a game and a half up on the Cavaliers. And again, even if they do fall into the third seed, I am really not worried about it. You look at look at some of the teams in the Western Conference. They just want to be in the playoffs. There's a lot of teams in the Western Conference that are veteran teams that do not care what their seed is. So I'm not going to throw a pity party over a 2 seed versus a 3 seed. Brett said the Cavs have a rough West trip, and I agree. Okay. So we know how the West Coast road trips are tough. The Bucks did get off to a slow start on offense last night. The Wizards jumped out to a 9-2 lead. The Bucks went on an 11-3 run after that. The Wizards went almost 5 minutes without a field goal. They turned that lead into a 17-6 run. And then this, in my opinion, is the biggest deal of last night, is that Giannis had 2 early fouls. Giannis had 2 fouls about 8 minutes into the game. And that held him out for most of the first half. Without Giannis on the floor, the Bucks were a little scrambled on rebounding. The Wizards had 24 of their first 37 points were in the paint. Bobby Portis did get off to a good start, which was encouraging. But Giannis came back in, and the Bucks went into a 13-8 run to take the lead back. The Bucks were sharing the ball well. In the first half, they had 20 assists on 22 field goals, which was great to see. Giannis was already approaching a triple-double. He had 11 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists at halftime. Chris Middleton at halftime already had 15 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals. The Bucks gave up just a couple easy buckets right before halftime. And then the Wizards were up 4 into halftime. Brett said he has a feeling that Beasley's going to go off tonight after going 1-for-10 last night. And some of the guys were saying it in some of the back room chat that we have. I think it was Christopher that was saying it, that Beasley's just getting all of his misses out before the playoffs, which I'm fine with. And here's the thing, and it's not just Beasley that shot poorly in this game. And, you know, it is what it is as far as the game goes. But people seriously need to respect Malik Beasley a little more. He's not going to accidentally have one of the best three-point shooting seasons in Milwaukee Bucks history. It's not an accident. Yes, he has bad games. He also has some great games. Sure, he's going to have 1-for-10 nights once in a while. He's also going to have some nights where he's like 7-for-8. He scored 30 against the Raptors earlier this season just from raining threes. So, and this goes for the team also when it comes to three-point shooting, that this to me reminded me of the Kings game where the Bucks did not shoot the three-point ball well. It's an outlier. And yes, outliers can happen twice. In an 82-game season, you can have two games where you shoot like 20% on threes. The Bucks were 11-for-48 in this game. That's 22.9%. So if you look at it and you see that there's games where the Bucks shoot 22%, let's say they shoot 35% on average on the season. I'm just picking a number. I don't know if that's exactly what it is. But they're going to have some games where they shoot 22%. They're going to have some games where they shoot 48% from threes. That's how you get averages. It doesn't pay to overreact to one game. Brett said, the announcer said, take the lid off the basket. Yeah, Marcus Johnson did say that. And that's the thing. Guys have bad games. And this is the thing, too. There were a couple guys that didn't shoot well. Brook Lopez was really effective in the paint early in the game. He finished with 6 points. But I'm not going to sit here and point fingers and be like, oh, well, we lost because of this one person. We've talked about that on this show a whole bunch of times, that it doesn't pay to just try to scapegoat one person just to be like, oh, well, if this one thing was different, the outcome would have been the way that we wanted it to. And that's not the case. And as we get into the Brewers in a little bit here, it's going to be almost the exact same thing with today's Brewers game. It doesn't pay to just blame Yoel Piams or to just blame Bryce Wilson or whatever it may be. It doesn't pay to try to be like, oh, well, this one person, if we just single out this one person, if you would have done your job the way you're supposed to, we would have won today. Like, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of energy. And all it does is make people feel bad. So second half of the Bucks, they got off to another slow start in the third quarter. The Wizards went on a 7-1 run in 2.5 minutes that grew into a 12-1 run in 3 minutes and change. And the Bucks were really quickly down 15. They were 4-of-21 on threes at that point. Doc Rivers called a second timeout. The Bucks did go on a 4-0 run after that, but they still stayed down double digits for most of the third quarter. Pat Connaughton did hit back-to-back threes that cut the lead to 8, and Bobby Portis had some second chance points that helped the Bucks go on a 10-2 run and cut the lead to 5 before the end of the third quarter. But out of the next quarter again, the Wizards went on a 9-4 run in 2.5 minutes. And the Bucks went on a 5-0 run after that, cut the lead to 5. Giannis had a layup, cut the lead to 3. AJ Green hit a 3 that cut the lead to 2. And that was about it. Wizards went on a 4-0 run. Pat Connaughton and Bobby Portis had a really exciting possession where they grabbed like 16 offensive rebounds in one possession. And it ended in a layup for Pat Connaughton. But other than that, the Bucks got some stops. And the Bucks had 2 pretty costly turnovers from Giannis. And here's the thing. I'm not singling out Giannis and saying the Bucks lost because of Giannis because of the 2 turnovers that he had. I'm simply pointing out the fact that Giannis, as much as we love him and believe that he's deserving of the MVP, he's not perfect. And I'm not singling Giannis out because we've already talked about Beasley. I already mentioned Brook Lopez. Everybody has their faults at times. And it's just in this game, Giannis had 2 pretty costly turnovers after the Bucks had gotten stops that could have made this game a different outcome. And again, not singling him out. I'm not saying that if Giannis doesn't make those 2 turnovers that the Bucks win. Because I'm not saying that. Everybody plays their part. It's a team game. You win as a team. You lose as a team. Not one person is solely dictating the outcomes. So Brett said, like Giannis said in the post-game interview, he said, we all played off, which we got to be better and hustle more. And no one person blaming, which I love of him. And that's the exact same thing that we are saying, that we say on the show often. It does not pay to just try to blame one person. Everybody has their jobs. Everybody has their roles. And looking at it, obviously Giannis, like I mentioned, those two turnovers, those are the only two turnovers he had in the game. They just came at the worst time of the game. It happens. Doesn't mean that Giannis is any less amazing or any less deserving of the MVP than he is. He finished with 35 points, 15 rebounds, 10 assists. Chris Middleton at 24 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, and 2 steals. Pat Connaughton at 15 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. Pretty good game for him. Bobby Portis had 12 points, 12 rebounds, and 3 assists. Bobby and Pat, not their most efficient games, but still good numbers for them. My biggest thing with this game is the Wizards had 70 points in the paint. That's my biggest thing with that. The Bucks just got to defend the paint better. Bottom line. Like I said, this game, three-point shooting is an outlier. It's going to happen. You just crumple it up, throw it over your shoulder, and move on to tonight. Thankfully, the Bucks have a quick turnaround. Jake's notes for Bucks and Wizards. He said he felt like the Bucks were doing a walkthrough on defense for 95% of this game. Lazy getting back in transition and not securing defensive rebounds really hurt us. Not the end of the world, but these types of games happening now and against teams like the Wizards is worrisome, but I trust they will figure it out in the final 7 games. Jake said his record prediction for the week is 4-0, which, if I'm not mistaken, there's only 3 games between now and next Wednesday, but I'm going to double check to make sure that I'm not wrong. 4 games. Yep. So Jake said 4-0, which is the Memphis Grizzlies, the Toronto Raptors, the New York Knicks, and the Boston Celtics. Those are all home games. With Chris Beverly, I didn't see if Dame was playing tonight. I probably should double check on that. Make sure if Dame's going to play tonight or not before I say what I was thinking. I know Beverly's out, and I know Chris Middleton is out because they're doing the okay. Yeah. The ankle injury management. So Damian Lillard, Chris Middleton, and Patrick Beverley are out. They are playing the Grizzlies, who are on pace to have like one of the most injury plagued seasons of like all time in the NBA. I think the Bucks still can win. And I think if we get the point forward version of Pat Connaughton, I think the Bucks can win tonight. So I'm okay with Jake's 4-0. On the week. And like we said before, the Bucks have 7 games left and they are a game and a half up on the Cleveland Cavaliers for the 3 seed in the Eastern Conference. And again, if the Cavaliers are able to move into the 2 seed and the Bucks end up in the 3 seed, I'm not going to freak out. I'm not going to freak out. As I said before, the Bucks have won a championship as a 3 seed. So if they end up in the 3 seed, I'm not going to freak out. And their chances are going to be just as good as they are as a 2 seed. And we'll see what happens. But between now and next Wednesday, 4 games, and Jake and I will be back to recap those next Wednesday. Other than that, it's baseball season. Baseball season, Brewers are back, and a very, very, very satisfying series against the Mets on what should have been Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday, which turned into Friday, Saturday, and Sunday because there was adverse weather in New York. If only there were a place where you could go and have a roof on the stadium so that no matter what weather was going on outside, you knew that it would be comfortably warm inside, no rain, no clouds. Just have your baseball as scheduled to start the season. If only there was a place like that. But nope, we're going to cater to New York and Chicago and have opening series there where it's going to be 35, raining, miserable, windy in the end of March / beginning of April. Oh, my. Rob Manfred is the worst commissioner in all of professional sports. So the Brewers started off in New York. Game one against the Mets, opening day. I want to give credit to William Contreras for kicking off a great run by Freddie Peralta. So Freddie Peralta gave up a solo home run to Marte and a walk after that. William Contreras was able to throw and pick off the runner from first base. And after that, Freddie Peralta retired 13 straight batters. Freddie Peralta was fantastic in his first pitcher, his first game as the opening day pitcher. And I want to address a couple things. First, Sal Frelick and Bryce Durang not being in the starting lineup. And Bryce Durang was a little more surprising because Pat Murphy said he was going to be the opening day starter. And then the Mets ended up facing a left-handed opening day starting pitcher in Jose Quintana. So that's why those two weren't starting. They both did end up in the game. And Blake Perkins and Joey Ortiz started the game. And I want to give Pat Murphy some credit because he started Blake Perkins and Joey Ortiz. And both of them had hits off of Jose Quintana. And the Brewers were able to get him out after four innings, I think. I think it was four innings that Quintana pitched. But they were able to get him out, thankfully, to those that call by Pat Murphy, which he deserves credit for. This was the Brewers' 11th one hit or less game since 2019 when the Brewers hired Chris Hook. That's number one in all of baseball in one hitters or less since the Brewers hired Chris Hook in 2019. Freddie Peralta has 5 of the 11. That was very surprising to me to know that Freddie Peralta was that dominant, for lack of a better word. And then I wanted to say this to Jake, and I wanted to get Jake's reaction to this with watching Jackson Chourio, because he's gaining some confidence and he's gaining more. And I'm going to talk about him literally every single one of these games. Is he's gaining some confidence. I think it's only a matter of time before he gets settled in and he's going to play with some serious swagger. Jackson Chourio, he said he models his game after Julio Rodriguez and Ronald Acuña Jr. If that's how he carries himself and he looks like he's a guy that is very much enjoying his first major league season, there's no limit to what Jackson Chourio can do. A couple things that I want to watch this season when we're talking baseball games, when Jake and I are talking about Brewers games, is I want to look at 1-2-3 innings by the Brewers and against the Brewers. And then I want to look at strikeouts. And Jake said he's also looking at strikeouts, and I don't remember his exact reasoning for why, but...
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Hail Mary. That's Hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. Hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Oh, sorry. This is why. He has it written in his notes. 9.67 strikeouts per game last year. So his goal for them is to keep it around 7, which they did in game 1. I think 7 is a little high. Or sorry, a little... too high of an expectation. 7 strikeouts in a game for a team is, that's a pretty low number. My goal is for them to be at 9 or under. So looking at 7 strikeouts for the game, that is a very good number. I'm happy if the Brewers only have 7 strikeouts. I think that increases their chances of obviously getting on base because they're putting more balls in play. Looking at 1-2-3 innings, the Brewers pitched 7 1-2-3 innings in this game. And they only went down 1-2-3 3 times. So very efficient work by the Brewers there. And then I just want to throw this out there. The first three innings of this game show very good reasoning why batting average isn't the best stat to just base everything off of. And this was the like one of the biggest things that people brought up when the Brewers signed Gary Sanchez. Oh, he's got a 240 batting average. No, you'll fit right in. The Brewers had two hits and zero runs in the first three innings. And the Mets had one hit, one run. More hits does not equal more runs automatically. There are other things that matter outside of that. Slugging, on-base percentage, OPS, which combines the two. Batting average on balls in play, weighted runs created. There are so many better stats to determine a batter's value than just batting average. People, you have to move on from looking at only batting average when you're talking about baseball players. You have to. Michael, I'm glad you're watching because I'm going to call you out in a minute here. Michael said, sure, he'll play with confidence. Nothing seems too big for him. His and the Brewers' future is bright. I strongly agree. Looking at Jackson Chourio in this game, he was 1-for-3, drew a walk in his first at-bat as a major leaguer, and he played good defense, which is awesome. Christian Yelich went 3-for-4. He hit the first Brewers home run of the season. Freddie Peralta had 6 innings pitched, 1 hit, 1 earned run, 8 strikeouts, and 1 walk. And Abner Uribe was the first fireman, the first bullpen guy who's going to take over to help with the Devin Williams absence. It seems like he's going to be the 1A fireman for a closing role for the Brewers while Devin Williams is recovering. And then 12 of the 26 players on the Brewers opening day roster are on their first opening day roster. Now, it's not 12 guys being on the first times in the majors, but that includes guys like Sal Frelick, Abner Uribe, who came up during the season last year but weren't on at the beginning. Okay. Last thing we have to talk about in this one is Rhys Hoskins. So Rhys Hoskins obviously slides into second base. McNeil screams at him. And we get one of what I think will end up being like my favorite moments of the entire season is Rhys Hoskins doing the crying face. That might end up, like I said, end up being one of my favorite moments of the season because that was amazing. It was hilarious to see him do that, and I enjoyed it very much, and I hope he does more stuff like that. And we posted the video on the page. Everybody loved it except for Mets fans, shockingly, and even Phillies fans were commenting on our stuff, which it's rare to see positive interactions come from Philadelphia, but they all loved Rhys Hoskins. We said we'll take care of him in Milwaukee. And it was a lot of fun. So going into game two, Jake said he loves Hoskins' toughness and approach at the plate. He said Terang was the underrated star of the game with the 3 steals, and Uribe with the holster celebration was sick. Again, Uribe being the first guy who's going to take over the closing role, and I'm going to get into this when we get into some of the other games as well. Christian Yelich. How about Christian Yelich throwing a guy out at second base? And Harrison Bader, who's not a refrigerator. It's not Rowdy Tellez running the bases that Christian Yelich threw out at second base. Christian Yelich threw a center fielder out at second base. So good for him. Jake already mentioned Terang's defense as well. Or he mentioned Terang with steals, but his defense was fantastic as well. And then DL Hall. So DL Hall made the start, and we talked. Vinny Rattino loves DL Hall. He actually scouted him when he was with the Rangers, which is cool. And looking at it, 4 innings pitched is the longest outing of his career. And I'm going to touch on this when we get into some of the other starters as well. We have to be a little patient with some of the Brewers starters, whether it be guys coming off injury or guys pitching, starting for the first time in a long time. You have to be a little bit patient. And I really, really thought about making a compilation of some of the horrible non-strike calls that DL Hall got that were called balls, a really questionable strike zone. I should have pulled up the umpire scorecard from this game because it felt like DL Hall was getting shafted a little bit. He threw a great slider. I loved his slider in this game. He threw some really good changeups, and he located his fastball well. I'm really, really excited for what DL Hall can be in the future. Looking at some of the other guys, Christian Yelich Willy Adames, Bryce Turang, Jackson Chourial, all of them were 2 for 5 in the game. Yelich had an RBI. Adames had an RBI. Turang stole 3 bases. The Brewers did a good job of extending at-bats and driving up Severino's pitch count, just like they did with Quintana. Yet Severino had 88 pitches in 5 innings. Looking at the Brewers as a whole, 24 hits in 2 games, and Christian Yelich had 5 of them, which is the most in 2 games since Lorenzo Cain in 2018. 24 hits in 2 games is the 4th most in franchise history in their first 2 games. In 1996, they had 29. 1994, they had 27. And in 1982, they had 25. So 4th most all-time in their first 2 games for hits. Really encouraging to see that from the Brewers. One other guy that I want to have some respect put on as far as the Brewers' bullpen goes is Elvis Baguero. He absolutely has some great, great stuff. Really like seeing Elvis Baguero pitching. Just another one of those guys that I think is just, as he continues to grow, is going to move later and later into games. Now, let's talk Rhys Hoskins. So, in the first inning, Rhys Hoskins gets up with 2 outs, and the first pitch that he sees pulls a single past the third baseman, gives the Brewers a 3-0 lead after they were up 1-0 before he came up to bat. 3-0 Brewers. Then he comes up again into the third inning, and Willy Adames has a leadoff single. And then Rhys Hoskins with 1 out gets down 0-2, works back to 2-2, and then pulls a home run and makes the game 5-1. Like, Mets fans just cannot boo this guy any more than they already were. And then he gets up again in the 5th, and he hits a single. And then he gets up in the 7th, and then the Mets decide to throw at slash behind him. And my favorite part about this is that there's a Mets broadcast of this, and they're talking about throwing at Rhys Hoskins, and he goes, they're about 2 hours too late to send the message to Rhys Hoskins. So Hoskins is already 3 for 3 on the day, and then you decide to throw at him? That's questionable strategy by the Mets there. And it was probably the loudest that they cheered the entire series when Rhys Hoskins got thrown at. But all in all, 2-0 start for the Brewers. Oliver Dunn made his debut. Sal Frelick was moved into the leadoff spot, and Jackson Chourial was moved down to the 9 spot. I like it when they do stuff like that. I like it when Pat Murphy or previously Craig Counsell would do things like that by essentially giving you like almost like a double leadoff hitter. And here's my thing with Sal Frelick and Jackson Chourial is you could alternate those two. And as we saw today, Sal Frelick struggled a little bit to start the season, so he got moved down to the 6th spot. I'm perfectly fine with alternating Chourial and Frelick at 1 and 9 and having them batting in front of each other. Because what that does is it essentially, like they said it during the broadcast, it gives you like a double leadoff, and it gives you a guy who can get on base ahead of the top of your order where you have other guys that get on base in front of your base drive-in guys, your run-driving guys. So I'm totally fine with Chourial being moved to the 9 spot, and we get back to Game 3. And again, Turang and Chourial flashing leather, playing good defense, and being effective hitting, which I'm going to get into with them when we get through the whole series with the Twins as well. William Contreras, so good at going to all fields. So good. In this game, he used both the right field and the left field line. He's very, very good at just going where the pitch takes him, giving or taking what the pitcher is giving him, and using the whole field. It's fantastic that he does that. Seeing Brian Hudson for the first time as a Brewer, I really actually am excited to see more Brian Hudson. He pitched, I believe, 3 full innings in this game. I think he's going to be really good. He's super tall. I think he's 6'8", and he has a super wide release point as a left-handed pitcher, which as a batter, it's got to be super tough to try to pinpoint that release. For him to be super tall, left-handed, and throwing from like a not quite a sidewinder, but he's basically like parallel to the ground when he's releasing the ball. That's got to be tough to look at. And he's got some pretty good stuff. So I'm excited to see more Brian Hudson. The Brewers, through the first series of the year, swept the Mets, obviously. 8 for 8 on steal attempts, which was really exciting. The Brewers are going to be built on speed for sure. And then I want to throw this out there with the Brewers series in New York. And it carries into the Twins series as well. Willy Adames' plate discipline looks a lot better. A lot better. And I feel similarly about Bryce Durang. And that, to me, is a big deal. First of all, for Willy Adames, if he's striking out less, that's just giving him more opportunities to put the bat on the ball. And if you look at 2022, we know it can happen when he does that a lot. He's a candidate to hit 30-plus home runs, so I'm very excited to see Willy Adames having improved plate discipline. And then Bryce Durang. Man, shout out to that guy, huh? A really great start to the season for Bryce Durang. Playing a lot, playing really great defense, doing well at the plate, which is a huge deal for Bryce Durang. Now, as we get into the Twins series, last thing on the final Mets game. Game 3, Jake has 3 of the 4 runs came across with 2 outs, so some clutch hitting between Adames, Contreras, and Churio. 3 more stolen bases, making the Brewers 8 for 8, like I mentioned. And in total, the Brewers were 10 for 34 with runners in scoring position. Had 34 hits compared to 29 strikeouts, so that's a positive. Yeah, anytime the Brewers are improving with runners in scoring position, I am on board with some good things. As I get into today and yesterday's games with the Twins, Michael, if you're still watching, I have something for you. Again, yes, I'm going to call you out a little bit, but you could have been much whinier about it than you were, than I expected. So with yesterday afternoon's game, the home opener, the Brewers only went down 1-2-3 once, and the Twins went down 1-2-3 4 times. The Brewers had 8 strikeouts. I'm totally fine with that. Like I said, my goal is going to be under 9. Jacob Junis made his Brewers debut, and now I saw this commented on the page that Junis was pulled too early. This was intentional. He had some shoulder tightness in his last spring start, so they intentionally pulled him a little bit sooner. That's why I mentioned, like, with DL Hall, and as I get into today's game, Joe Ross, like, we have to be a little bit patient with the starting rotation, at least in the beginning of the season. Michael said, make it quick. I got to go to work. All right. I'll jump ahead. I'm going to give you the 2023 numbers on on-base percentage and runs per game. Or, sorry, not runs per game, but total runs. So the Brewers in 2024 are 7th in on-base percentage, and they are 13th in runs per game. It doesn't make sense this early in the season to look at total runs because teams have played more games. So right now the Brewers are 13th in runs per game, 7th in on-base percentage. In 2023, the top 5 teams in on-base percentage were the Braves, Dodgers, Rangers, Rays, and Astros. So those are the top 5 teams in on-base percentage in 2023. I played this with Jake last night, and I'm like, hey, guess the top 5 teams in on-base percentage. I think it took him 8 tries to get the 5 teams. And then I told him, hey, name me the top 5 teams in runs scored. Braves, Dodgers, Rangers, Rays, Astros. Literally the exact same order. The correlation between on-base percentage and runs is exact, at least for the top 5. But I'm just saying, over the course of a 162-game season, looking at 5 teams at 162 games, that correlation is pretty strong. So if the Brewers are putting lots of guys on base, it stands to reason that they will also score lots of runs. So I'm not worried about having games where the Brewers seemingly get a lot of guys on base and don't score a ton of runs, because that stuff over the course of the season is going to even out. Having guys getting on base is going to help you score runs, because eventually the other team is going to have no more bases to put guys on. So on-base percentage will lead to runs. Be a little patient. More than a 5-game sample size. Now, like I said, Michael, you posed the question in a not so whiny way like I was expecting. I was expecting to see it on a Facebook post, somebody being like, here we go, typical Brewers, can't bat anybody in. They can get guys on base, but nobody to drive them in. We are 5 games into the season. Just be a little patient. So, looking at the beginning of the series with the Twins, the 2-game series, Jacob Junis made his debut, like I said. Oliver Dunn, he has a hit in each game that he started through yesterday's game. And then the Brewers putting up runs, even with Sal Frelick struggling, is exciting. Obviously, it happens. Sal Frelick, 4 games into the season, people are saying to send him to AAA already. It's like, man, Bryce Harper started 0-for-11. I wonder if Phillies fans were freaking out. And I get that Sal Frelick isn't Bryce Harper, but, man, we are 4 games into the season. The Brewers' kind of questionable defense did let the Twins steal a run in yesterday's game. And then Abner Uribe, again, getting the primary closing work. Now, I wanted to get Jake's thoughts on this as well, and I'm going to stand by this because I believe this is what Pat Murphy is doing, is that he's using Abner Uribe as the primary closer so far this season, A, because I think eventually he's going to be the Brewers' closer, but B, I think he's trying to keep everybody else's role somewhat similar to what it's going to be when Devin Williams is back. You know, it's not going to be, okay, Uribe was the closer today, Piamps was the closer yesterday, the next day it's going to be Paguero, and then it's going to be, you know, a different guy the different day. It's not going to be like that. It's going to be kind of more guys moving back an inning or so, or more middle relief guys just getting into games earlier, which we've seen. But trying to keep everybody else's role as similar as it's going to be when Devin Williams is healthy. Then going through this game, Bryce Turang had 2 more stolen bases. So he was up to 6 for the season, leading Major League Baseball. That was posted on the pages this morning that Bryce Turang is leading Major League Baseball in stolen bases. Now we get into today's game. Sal Frelick did bounce back. He was 2-for-3. Like I said, people just got to be a little more patient than 4 games. And today's game too, I don't want to see people going, well, if Yoel Piamps hadn't given up those doubles, the Brewers would have won. Or if Bryce Wilson hadn't given up that home run, or Albie Miller wouldn't have done that. It's a team game. Win is a team. Lose is a team. The Brewers went 1, 2, 3, 4 times. The Twins only twice. You know, it's going to happen. Just being blunt, it's going to happen. That they're going to have games where they lose by having leads about 2/3 of the way through the game. Going to happen. That said, were still some good positive takeaways from this game. Looking at Willy Adames again in the first inning. Brewers had guys on base. They just weren't able to get him in. But Willy Adames got down 0-2 with guys on second and third base and one out. Got down 0-2, worked the count all the way back to 3-2, and then drew a walk. Willy Adames' plate discipline is absolutely going to be something I keep an eye on, because it's something that I think correlates to the Brewers' success. And Jake has the stat. It's on games. I think it was games when Willy Adames hits a home run. The Brewers were just like an 800%, like an 800 winning percent team. And that's not exact numbers. Jake has the stat, like I said, but the Brewers are very good in games where Willy Adames is very good. Shouldn't be surprising, but he's 1 of 9. Today, Jackson Chourio, first career home run in his first week of the season. He was fantastic. He's already got a 5-game hitting streak, 5 games into his career. He's the youngest home run since 2018. It was Juan Soto. He's the youngest Brewer since Gary Sheffield in 1988 to hit a home run. And he's the 4th youngest Brewer in franchise history to hit a home run. Chourio, Sheffield, shockingly, not shockingly, Robin Yount and Daryl Porter in 1971 being the other youngest Brewers to hit home runs in franchise history. Now, Joe Ross, my opinion, got off to a decent start. He had a 1-2-3 inning in the first, thanks to some pretty decent defense by the Brewers. And in his first big league pitching since 2021, I understand some rust. He struggled with walks a little bit, and the bullpen had to do a lot of work. It is what it is. It's kind of how the early season is going. And the Brewers, they have an off day tomorrow, and then they play 13 straight. Thankfully, Wade Miley is making a rehab appearance on Friday with the Nashville Sounds, so he should be back into the fold. It looks like sometime during their next road trip when they go to Cincinnati and Baltimore. But again, I'm going to say it again. You have to be a little bit patient with some of the starters. Joe Ross is coming off an injury. Jacob Junis was dealing with a little bit of tightness in spring training. DL Hall is very wet behind the ears. And then we're looking at Freddie Peralta and Colin Ray, who, in my opinion, is very underrated by Brewers fans. And I made this case during the end of last season that Colin Ray was underappreciated just because he doesn't have great, you know, amazing blow the doors off games where he's striking out 13 guys. But some respect needs to be put on Colin Ray. Now, I want to talk Jackson Chourio, his first week as a Major League Baseball player. I mentioned the five-game hitting streak. Jackson Chourio's numbers over the five games. 350 batting average, 381 on base percentage, a 550 slugging percentage, and a 931 OPS. A fantastic start by Jackson Chourio. Absolutely could not ask anything more of him. Now, he's not the only Brewer that's off to a good start. Christian Yelich already has two home runs. He's batting 368 with a 429 on-base percentage and a 684 slugging. He has an 1113 OPS. Rhys Hoskins is batting 294 in the first week of the season. He's obviously got the two home runs because he hit one today as well. He's got only three strikeouts by Rhys Hoskins is a good number too. He's got three strikeouts, three walks. Christian Yelich only has three strikeouts, but he's got seven hits. Bryce Durang has seven hits and only five strikeouts and leading Major League Baseball in stolen bases. Bryce Durang, first week of the season, batting 438 with a 444 on base percentage. Bryce Durang, just another one of the guys, just taking what pitchers are giving him. Yesterday is a fantastic example of just putting the bat on the ball and just putting the ball in play. Great, great work by Bryce Durang through the first week of the season. Mentions Chourio. Contreras off to kind of an okay start. Same with Willie Adames. Guys that I think will get better as the season goes on. Same with Sal Frelick, because I think he's too talented to not have a really good season. But looking at the Brewers the next week between now and next Wednesday, when we will be covering some more games, the Brewers have three games versus Seattle starting on Friday. I'm actually going to be at the game on Saturday, so I'm looking forward to that. And then they have two games against Cincinnati. That third game against the Reds will take place after next Wednesday's show. So Jake and I will have five Brewers games again between today and next Wednesday. Other than that, I'm not mad at a 4-1 start by the Brewers. Definitely can't complain about that. So that's where we're at. Bucks and Brewers. Bucks are kind of winding down with the regular season. Brewers are just getting started on theirs. And not a lot to complain about. Other than that, looking at some upcoming shows for us, Friday night, we are doing our safeties and cornerbacks. Myself, Jake, Simon, Bryant, we're going to be covering cornerbacks and safeties, looking at our top 12 at each of those positions. So join us Friday night for that to talk about some upcoming draft prospects. Jake and I'll be back next Wednesday for Bucks and Brewers. And then, again, April 16th, that's going to be our next watch party. If you are interested in just checking it out to see what our pregame show looks like, what our watch parties are like when Jake and I are watching games together, things that we are noticing, things that we feel noteworthy during games, come and watch that game with us. That one's going to be totally free. And then you can subscribe to us on Patreon. That's where those watch parties are going to take place starting in May. People that sign up during April will be able to vote on the games that we cover in May. And then the games that are for the Patreon, Jake and I are making our own pregame shows and postgame shows for that. I can give you a little preview just what it looks like. Jake and I did the Bucks and Thunder game, and we got all dressed up and we got the virtual background going. Jake and I are trying to be official with our pregames and postgame show. Really trying to make the content worthy of people giving us $5 a month of their hard-earned money to help Jake and I further our goal of making the Wisco Fanatics show our full-time jobs. So anybody who joins that, we will be extremely thankful for. The other thing with that is you will be able to see the graphics that get posted on our social media pages before anybody else does. The Bryce Terang stolen base graphic, that was on Patreon last night before it was posted this morning. Same with the Brewers being 8-for-8 in steals against the Mets. That one was in there the night before. That one got posted on social media, so you also get to see those early in addition to the watch parties. And that's something, if it goes well, Jake and I'll be able to do more of in the future. So very excited for what that potential future holds if people are willing to check us out and do those watch parties with us. So we're very excited to get those going. Again, April 16th, come join us. Come see what it looks like. See if it's something you're interested in. All of our regular content is still going to be totally, completely free. That's never going to change. I'm just looking to do something a little extra and, you know, have a little something to show for the time, that extra time that we're putting into that. And again, if it's something that goes well, we'll be able to do more of in the future. Jake should be back with us on Friday. Hopefully he's not dealing with too much headache without having power and internet at his house due to the weather. Anybody else that didn't have any power or internet, just power in general due to the weather, everybody be safe, and we will see you guys on Friday night. Thanks, everybody, for watching.